This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, the Green Party candidate in the State House district that includes parts of Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties, John Anthony LaPietra. But first,
stuttering was something I never talked about. Every time I opened my mouth, I felt like there was something wrong with me.
Michael Turner's story of how stuttering has affected his life and how he came to terms with it is the basis of the documentary film The Way We Talk. Turner will be at Kalamazoo Valley Community College on Thursday when his film is screened at the Dale B. Lake Auditorium. The Western Michigan University chapter of the National Student Speech Language Hearing Association is hosting the screening to raise money for Camp Shoutout, the camp for youth who stutter is hosted near Muskegon each summer. Filmmaker Michael Turner joins us by phone. Thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Gordon.
And Western Michigan University Professor of Speech, Language, and Hearing Services, Stephen Tasco, is with us in studio. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here, Gordon.
Michael, let's start with you. When did you decide that you wanted to make this film?
I actually shot the first scene of it way back in 2009. I was on a trip with a friend of mine, and he asked me how it felt to stutter. And I was 25 years old at that time, and no one had ever asked me that. I had never really talked about it. And I felt a lot of things when he asked me. Like, I felt kind of embarrassed about it, that people could actually see it. But I could also see how earnest he was, and like how interested he was. And we were on like an all night drive and ended up talking about it quite a bit. And so that kind of planted the seed of just what if I was more open about this thing that I've always tried to hide.
Can you remember being young and maybe realizing for the first time that you did stutter and that it might, you know, create a problem or get in the way of something you wanted to do?
You know, that's a good question. That's something I talked about with my brother for the movie, because he stutters too, and I was kind of curious when it started, but neither of us could really remember a starting point. It was just more like, it was just always there. Like, every time I would just be in class and want to say something, or out with my, you know, like out like trying to order food, or just any time I would have like a social interaction, it would just be there kind of pulsing in the background of that, this kind of sense of like shame or something was wrong.
Stephen, what do we know about stuttering? What do we know about why someone stutters?
Well, that's a really good question, Gordon. The short answer is we really don't know the details of the whys of stuttering. We're starting to gain a lot of information over the last number of years. We've been studying the problem for a long time. We do know a few things. We do know that there is a tendency for stuttering to run in families, and that there's a lot of work being done around the world and here in the U.S. trying to understand the genetic basis of stuttering. So we do know that for many people who stutter, there may be some genetic predisposition. It tends to run in families. We also know from some recent work that's being done in a number of places, including here in Michigan, over at University of Michigan and Michigan State University, from brain imaging work, that even at the very earliest ages, and stuttering begins typically fairly early, but not as soon as you start to talk. Roughly around age 2, 2.5 to 4 is when it typically erupts. So that's why a lot of folks don't really remember it starting, because it's sort of at that point where their continuous memories are not there. But they're finding that there's definitely some documentable differences in some of the brain imaging studies that have been done, suggesting that there may be some neurological predisposition for it as well. So in terms of why people stutter, we're not quite sure, but we do know a lot of people start to stutter. Actually, quite a few people, when they start stuttering, will actually recover. About 4 in 5 actually will recover without any assistance or help. But those folks who do continue to stutter past that point often will do so for most of their lives. And so the longer you've been stuttering, the less likely it is that it's something that's going to you're going to recover from. So it can be a lifelong journey for folks like Michael. And what often happens with that is it isn't just simply a speech difficulty, but it starts to interact with all kinds of aspects of your life, as Michael was describing.
It's interesting you mentioned that idea of recovery. If you go to the websites for groups that are, you know, stuttering organizations or support groups for people who stutter, there's a pretty long list of pretty famous people. James Earl Jones, the actor, Carly Simon, the singer, the vice president, Joe Biden, stutterers as young people, as children, and yet at some point were able to make a living talking or singing without stuttering. And I guess that goes to your point that many people will at some point not stutter.
Well, and many people, the important point is there's people who will recover without even having to think about it. But a lot of people, if you ask them, they still are working and controlling and still consider themselves a person who stutters, even into adulthood, because there's certain circumstances they might find themselves in. Many performers are able to do it because avoid the stuttering or at least deal with their fluency issues because they are working, singers often, it's very scripted, or actors as well. So a lot of people do stutter. If you just polled the population, about 1 in 100 stutter. So even on this university campus of close to 25,000, there's a couple hundred folks out there who are past the point where they're going to recover and consider themselves persons who stutter.
Michael, so we mentioned there that this can be genetic and seems to run in families, and that seems to be the case with your family, correct?
Yes. My mom, my grandpa, his brother, and my brother all stutter as well. And that's as far back as we know our family history, but I'm sure it goes back a lot farther than that. Like, I interviewed a geneticist at the National Institutes of Health for the film, Dr. Dennis Terena, and he actually was talking about tracing genes 750 generations back into prehistory, basically. So, it seems possible to that stuttering has always been with people, but what's interesting too is that my friend Ian, who stutters and he's in the film, he has no family history whatsoever. So as Steve was saying, it just seems very mysterious.
Did you, at some point in your life, go for therapy to try and eliminate your stutter?
Oh, yeah. I was in therapy since childhood, up until I was about 15 or 16 in high school. I saw several different speech therapists at that point, but I probably wasn't ready to look at it. Like, actually admit that I did stutter. And so it wasn't a very positive experience for me. And by the time I was 15 or 16, I just didn't want to hear the word stutter ever again, and stopped going into therapy and just did my best act like it did not exist.
Stephen, what does Camp Shoutout do for a young person, a child who has a stutter?
Well, Gordon, Camp Shoutout is a summer residential program that's been running for a number of years on Big Blue Lake in Muskegon. And it's a week-long residential camp. Kids go there. It's a regular summer camp. But the interesting thing about it is that all the kids that are there stutter. It is organized and run by a couple of great people, Julie Rayner, who is a speech-language pathologist in the Muskegon area, who is an organizer, and Kristen Camella, who's a fluency specialist, who's has a private practice in Chicago. And it's a really interesting model because most kids, if you think about it, if you have a stuttering problem, one of the biggest challenges that kids have is meeting new people and running the risk of exposing themselves as persons who stutter. And so things like summer camp for many kids is off limits to them because they just don't want to go there. And it's a brand new bunch of kids they've got to meet. And this is a great opportunity because they're able to spend the week with other kids. Many times, if you look at the demographics of stuttering, you may be the only kid in your class. You may be the only kid in your school who's experiencing that problem. And so many kids have not met other kids who stutter. So we have a large number of kids running between the ages of 8 and 16 that attend the camp. They spend a week doing all kinds of cool camp stuff, but then also there are a number of speech-language pathologists, as well as students in training, graduate students from various training programs, as well as undergraduate student volunteers, all with the goal of making this a good camp experience, but at the same time working on issues in and around stuttering. So whether it be working on behavioral techniques like you saw in the video, or we heard in the audio tape, or working on issues in and around acceptance, recognizing that you can stutter and be okay with it. Doesn't mean that you don't want it to improve, but you need to some self-acceptance. And so there's a lot of different levels that the camp directors work at Camp Shoutout, and it's a really great experience for kids.
Michael, have you embraced or come to terms with the idea that you are someone who stutters?
Well, that's something that changes day by day, I think. Some days I am cool with it, and some days it can be pretty frustrating or inconvenient. But thinking about where I was 5 years ago, I think I have come a long way. You know, like me and my brother, you know, like call each other now to like talk about funny things that have happened when we get blocked in front of a stranger or a police officer or something. But it's like really, you know, like being open with my family about it was something that really helped me a lot and kind of helped me come, you know, like I just became a father as well, which is kind of an impetus for this film, the thought that, you know, my daughter might stutter too. And so, I feel a more pressing concern now to really be open about it, for the kids that I've met, while working on this film, you know, like, you know, it's not really about me if I stutter while ordering a coffee at Starbucks. I think it's important for that cashier to hear stuttering and know that it's okay. You know, that like I'm going to stutter and I'm going to smile when I stutter on my name, and that is just an okay thing. You know, so when like a kid who's 8 years old might walk into that Starbucks next week and stutter ordering a hot chocolate, that person would recognize it.
Stephen Tasco and Michael Turner, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Stephen Tasco is a professor of speech, language, and hearing at Western Michigan University. He joined us in studio. Michael Turner joined us by phone. His film, The Way We Talk, is being screened on Thursday at Kalamazoo Valley Community College. Michael Turner will also participate in a question and answer session at the event, sponsored by the Western Michigan University chapter of the National Student Speech Language Hearing Association. You can find more details, including how to get tickets, at WMUK.org.
I've started seeking out other people who stutter and listening to their stories. And somewhere along the way, I found mine.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The 63rd State House District includes parts of both Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. John Anthony LaPietra is the Green Party candidate for the seat, which is currently held by Republican Dave Maturin. John Anthony LaPietra, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell the audience about yourself.
Well, I've been an attorney for just about 8 years, going on 8 years now, working on civil, constitutional, election, and property rights, and also doing a lot of what's called document review, but on a somewhat higher level because I can am both an attorney trained and also knowledgeable in Japanese language. So that's where I make a lot of the money, and then therefore I can afford to do a little bit of pro bono work on the side for some other causes. I have had a couple other careers before that. I had about 10 years experience each in government, state, regional, and local, nonprofit organizations or groups, and the private sector. So I have a somewhat balanced view of how things can be done, I think. I know that government is like a business in some ways, and it can be run in a business-like way, because it is the people's business. But because it's the people's business, it's not exactly like a for-profit business. We don't look at the bottom line every quarter. At least I hope we don't. I'm running as a Green because I believe in the Green Party's values, and I think a lot of us do, actually. I'm hoping that this year more of us find out how green we really are. The main green value that I'm representing with this campaign is grassroots democracy. Our state's constitution doesn't have quite as famous a start as "We the People of the United States," but it does get to the point pretty well. Article 1, Section 1 says, "All political power is inherent in the people. Government is instituted for their equal benefit, security, and protection."
So, if you're elected to the state house, what would that mean? What are the policies that you would pursue that would fulfill the Michigan Constitution?
Well, as I see it, those who have been in power in Lansing for a long time, so it's not necessarily one or the other of the two major parties exclusively, have been working particularly hard to protect their own power and position against interference by the people. They've made it harder to vote. They've made it harder to register to vote. They've made it harder to second-guess their decisions with referendums or initiatives, or to recall them if we think they've done a bad job. They're not subject to Freedom of Information or Open Meetings Act, and I know there is a small package going on right now, but I think it's a fairly small loaf to settle for. There are a lot of devilish details to worry about. We can come back to those later at some point, but we need to fix all of those things. We need to do something as simple as actually passing a law, which Michigan doesn't have, to require public officials to declare their financial situations and gifts given to them. Most states have those. We don't.
Gifts given to them in the course of their work? I mean...
Yes. All right. And personally, but in the course of their work, certainly. As you probably know, Gordon, last fall, the Center for Public Integrity rated Michigan dead last, 50th out of 50, in state government integrity and accountability. I think this is related to the fact that those in power have looked out for themselves more than for the people. And changes in all those areas that I want to make.
Okay, let's talk about voting for a second. How would you make it easier to register to vote? What's in the way right now if someone wants to register?
There are confusions about whether you can register or not, or where you're going to be able to register and where you're going to be able to vote, particularly for students who are sometimes trapped between voting where their families are or where they are living at college.
Would you allow students to register where they're going to college, even if they've maintained their parents' address as their legal residence?
I believe I would, as long as they aren't registered in both places and vote in both places. I think where they actually spend most of their time and know the issues and the people involved would be a better place for them to be able to vote.
Okay, actually voting. What would you do to make it easier for people to actually vote?
Oh, goodness. All sorts of states have different ways to do that. I would like to look at the whole study and pick out some of the best practices, but there are some ideas such as no reason absentee voting, voting by mail, voting...
Early voting?
That too was certainly what I was thinking of actually was making it a holiday or a half holiday. I mean, not all these ideas would work together because some of them address the same issues, but there are all number of ways we can make voting easier. Making it a little clearer that people can vote now that the straight party ticket device is back on, that people can vote a straight party ticket at the top and then still split the ticket and vote for individual candidates of other parties.
Hold on. Wait a minute. If you vote straight party, if you hit the Democratic or Republican circle, you're voting for Republican on all of the partisan races. That's how that works.
Yes, but you can make exceptions. You can split your ticket. You can say, I want all the Republicans but this Democrat, or all the Democrats but this Libertarian. In the primary, you can only choose one party or the other. And
right.
Only those two parties are on the ballot in the primary. But in the general election, there are three ways to vote. Straight party only. Mixed, which is individual votes without using the straight party device. Or a split ticket. It's in the law, and it's actually on the instructions that go with your ballot.
I will look it up.
I believe it's section 736B, but I'll have to get back to you to be extra sure.
You say on your website that... elected officials should only be able to be replaced by voters. What exactly are you talking about there?
Well, primarily I'm talking about emergency managers, which is about, at least the way Michigan does it, about as against government by the people as anything I can think of. They're not elected. They replace people that people have elected. They are not accountable to the people. They have additional powers. And there's something else wrong with the approach. We're only looking at emergencies of immediate financial issues. Isn't the Flint water crisis an emergency? Isn't the increasing trend of funding inequality and segregation in our schools an emergency? But we aren't looking at those things.
Okay. What should the state do, though, when they do see that there is a city which is in deep financial trouble and perhaps headed towards bankruptcy, or a school district for that matter? What should the state's response be at that point?
Well, first I would argue that they may have had something to do with getting them there in the first place. I think a lot of more local efforts in government public sector have been defunded by the state government in a lot of recent years. But I would say one other green value that I would like to encourage my fellow legislators to consider and implement as a policy is sustainability and focus on the future. I think the first thing you do when you have a crisis is to stabilize the situation and then start making it better and try to prevent it from happening again. If that comes with a price tag attached, then it does. But again, the government is supposed to be for our equal benefit, security, and protection. It's supposed to be working for our health, safety, and welfare.
Should state anti-discrimination laws include protections for sexual orientation and gender identity?
Yes. The Green Party has been in favor of that. Now, since it's been on the ballot here in Michigan in 2000, in 2002 we were the only party that actually came out against the anti-same-sex marriage.
2004.
It was already proposed in 2002. It came in 2004.
Well, it was on the ballot in 2004.
Yes, and we were out there as well. There was a there was an actual coalition of particularly against that ballot issue, and we were the only state party in that coalition.
How would you reform the state's auto insurance laws? You know, we currently have this system of the catastrophic claims fund, which can, you know, pay people, you know, in, you know, for the rest of their life if they are seriously injured. But we're the only state that has that. Are we doing something that the other 49 states should be doing, or do we need to reform that?
There may be some of each in that. I don't know. I think certainly the concept is good. People who are, you know, if we have no-fault insurance, then people who are injured for life by the, my no-fault of their own shouldn't necessarily have to pay that cost. I think one thing that would affect that is if, as the Green Party also advocates, we have a national single-payer system for health care rather than focusing on health insurance.
Of course, that has to be done at the federal level.
Well, some states have been trying it.
Would you propose it in Michigan if you're in the legislature?
I would, yes.
If there were a proposal on the ballot to legalize marijuana in Michigan, would you vote for it?
Yes, I helped collect a couple of signatures for it. The Green Party has been supporting... let me back up for a moment. It depends on which one it was. We supported the MI legalize proposal, the more, again, grassroots proposal. One of the other proposals was a bit more like the proposal that was rejected in Ohio because it was more top-down and trying to set up a small industry of particularly large growers. We do prefer the more homegrown approach, community-based economics as well as decentralization and grassroots democracy.
Should the state be mandating that a certain amount of energy come from renewable sources?
I think it's a very good idea. My presidential candidate, Jill Stein, is calling for 100% renewable and sustainable energy by 2030.
Okay. If you were in the state legislature, is that what you would propose?
I would propose that we start making a path towards that at the very least, yes.
So if you're elected to the state legislature, what are the changes that you would propose that you think would break this duopoly, as you call it, that would make it easier for someone who's not a Republican or a Democrat to run a competitive race for state house, Congress, et cetera?
Well, it's partly a matter of how the elections themselves are run. Any person of any party, but not of no party, can be an election inspector, a poll worker, but only a Republican and a Democrat can finally certify the results at any polling place, as one example of how the Republicans and Democrats have, should I say, duopolized positions. There are a lot of other actual agencies appointed as well as elected where only Democrats and Republicans can serve. And in truth, there are more of us who declare ourselves independent from either the Republicans or the Democrats, then belong to either one. Polling has shown that nationwide and here in Michigan, where we don't actually even have to register by party to vote, the figure is probably even higher. It may even be close to an absolute majority.
John Anthony LaPietra, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
John Anthony LaPietra is the Green Party candidate for the 63rd State House District. That includes parts of both Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. One footnote to that interview, John Anthony LaPietra was correct that voters can mark the straight party option on the fall ballot and then vote for candidates of other parties in individual races. I apologize for the error and any confusion. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.